Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. This is a special episode. It's not going to be an interview or a discussion. There's no guest, it's just me. And there's a couple of reasons I decided to do this. The first is that I had a pretty powerful message come to me during my vacation in California recently. And I wanted to share it with you guys because I feel that it's something that everyone should hear. And I think it'll help everyone who hears it, including all the JGB podcast listeners. I've only told a handful of people this so far, so this is the first time I'm sharing it with a wide audience. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to relate this story to you guys, and then I'm going to do an Ask Me Anything episode. So I took a bunch of questions on Reddit and Facebook, and I'll answer them as best as I can, and then we'll wrap it up. So here goes. It's quite a long and convoluted story to get me to be able to explain what I experienced, but I'm going to do my very best. Okay, so about 5 years ago, I had a different podcast that was called Digital Communion, and I had a guest on there called Vaz Shiran, and he runs the London College of Spirituality. Very interesting guy. I met him in Peru several years ago, and we formed a bond. He's just a very switched on, very connected human being, and I could sense that he was a high vibration kind of dude. And I decided to invite him on the podcast as a guest, and he said something to me on the podcast that stuck with me because I instantly knew it was true, and I saw it proven true over and over in my life. He said, "You have these two voices, right, in your head." And I know that's going to sound a bit out there. I'm not talking about schizophrenia or anything like that. But, you know, we all have this chattering monkey mind that provides a running commentary and makes judgments and does things like that. That's the first voice. And that's the head of the ego, right? That's the head of the monkey mind. The voice of the monkey mind. But there is another voice, which is the voice of the heart. And this voice comes from the source, or it comes from your spirit, or that deeper connected place. Some people would call it God. Some people would call it the universe. Some people have different names for it, right? Some people even call it your intuition. Either way, he said that the thing is, the voice of the head is very loud. It's always yattering away there, and you can hear it without trying too hard. In fact, it's hard to not hear it because it's always chattering away. And the voice of the heart speaks very, very softly, and you have to train yourself to be able to hear it. And when he said that to me, it made such an impression on me because, as I said, I knew there was some truth to it. And, you know, it's been my experience that whenever I listen to an act from the voice of the head, the voice of the ego, it usually brings drama or unhappiness or negativity into my life in some form or another. Whereas the voice of the heart, when I listen to its advice, it's never steered me wrong. And the thing is, I've only heard that voice of the heart a few times in my life. Literally, I could count on one hand how many times. I'll give you an example, or two examples. And the first time I heard it was what led to the creation of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood. It was a little voice during a sparring match that said, "Jiu-Jitsu is a brotherhood, and it should be shared with everyone." And that's what started the formation of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood in my mind. You know, another time I heard that voice that gave me some advice that I didn't listen to was several years ago. I was in a on-off relationship with a girl in Australia, and it had caused me a great deal of heartache, and it was a very difficult aspect of my life at the time. And she had moved back to Australia, and we didn't speak for a while, and then she sent me a text, and we got chatting again, and she said, "Yo, why don't you come live with me in Australia for a while? Come try it out." And I'll never forget that tiny little voice, that voice that little whisper just said to me in no uncertain terms, it said, and it was weird because it always speaks slowly. It said, if you want more pain, go to Australia. And I knew it was an important message, but I didn't take heed of that advice. And I went to go live in Australia, and it turned out to be, without a question, the most painful, difficult time of my life. Admittedly, I did learn a bunch of good lessons there, but it was really, really challenging, and in hindsight, probably not the right thing to do. So, needless to say, I trust that voice of the heart 100%, and I know when when a message comes from it, that it's important, and it's to be given attention. And so I was in California, in a fantastically beautiful part of Northern California, surrounded by forests, staying with a close friend of mine. My wife and I were out there, and I was struggling with a lot of things relating to my business and several relationships in my life. And I was really I was having a hard time, right? I was just having a very difficult time, and I could hear that voice of the head was, nattering at me all the time, all the time. And I knew that the things that it was, the judgments it was making and the ideas that we were bringing to mind were not healthy and not good. And so I was meditating to try to get that to stop and to see if I could hear the voice of the heart. And I spent a lot of time on walks in the forest and, meditating outdoors, looking up at the stars, just quieting everything down, not watching any TV, just really trying to tune in, trying to tune in. And when I least expected it, one day I heard that voice. And what it said to me was, again, super slowly, it said, stop all comparison, just like that. And I knew the instant I heard it, I knew that that was that voice, and I knew that this was important. And over the next few days, I started to realize how often my mind made comparisons specifically about myself and other people, or between myself and other people. And I realized that the vast majority in mis of misery and suffering in my life came from those comparisons. And since then, I've made a really active effort to stop the comparisons between myself and others, and even to stop comparisons between other things, such as situations I perceive as good and situations I perceive as bad. Obviously, you do need to be able to compare things. It's a function of the logical mind. If you're buying a car and you want to compare between two different models, I think that's a great time to be comparing things. But I think if you read between the lines and understand that this is a message about deeper things, in particular, it's about relationships and events. And I think it's especially important for jiu-jitsu players or people involved in jiu-jitsu because, there's a massive tendency in jiu-jitsu to compare yourself. We all do it. I know I do it. I compare my progress against others. And, you compare. If you challenge someone, or you train with someone who's got a brown belt and he beats you and you're a black belt, you make a comparison and you're like, oh, I don't understand. Why is this brown belt beating me? Why is he better than me? Or you see a really good guy at the gym and you might be jealous because he's stronger or better or younger or faster than you. And I realized that it's really important to stop those comparisons, to just drop them entirely when it comes to jiu-jitsu, because it's an intensely personal journey. And it's not something that anyone else can help you with. It's a journey that you're doing on your own. So there's no need to compare yourself to anyone else because those people aren't doing it for you. You're doing it for yourself. And I just feel that that's a really important message that I wanted to share with you guys. So I will end the philosophical ramblings now. I hope you guys get something out of that. I'd love your comments and feedback on that. You can put them on the Facebook post. If any of you have experienced anything similar. And now we'll just dive straight into the Q&A. So the first one is from someone on Reddit called FCKITALL. Hey Nick, I was thinking about the role of relaxation in jiu-jitsu, and I've started meditating seriously every day, especially if I get the chance before class. What are your thoughts on meditation and jiu-jitsu? I'm also curious what you think about jujitsu and the anxiety fight or flight response. This response being activated unnecessarily in anxiety disorders. Is it possible this response being activated during jujitsu can help the brain modulate the response more correctly outside of jujitsu? Okay, so yeah, maybe the philosophical ramblings aren't over. This is a two-part question. The first part is meditation and relaxation, and does he think they, what are my thoughts on how they play a role in jiu-jitsu? And, I think meditation and teaching yourself to relax goes way beyond just jiu-jitsu. It's a life skill. It's something that will improve every aspect of your life. Jiu-jitsu just happens to be one of those. I find the times when I am least effective in all aspects of my life, including on the mat, is the time when I haven't been meditating for a long time, and also when that's compounded with doing a lot of the things which I consider to be the opposite of meditation, and that includes using social media a lot and watching a lot of TV and playing on my phone a lot. To me, those are almost, I've mentioned before, like the anti-meditation. And if you're going to engage in those things, you have to have meditation to balance it out, or kind of like to clean your mind afterwards. And I think you'll find if you do give meditation a go, it will definitely help your jiu-jitsu. Meditation is not something difficult. There's nothing you need to buy when it comes to meditation. So don't rush off and get a course or feel you need a teacher or anything like that. All you need to do is sit down in a quiet place where you won't be disturbed with your eyes closed, and just focus on the sound of your breathing and watch the thoughts enter your mind. Just don't engage with them, just watch them. And every time you see it, recognize that you're thinking, just go back to the sound of your breathing. And it'll take a long time. It'll take 20 to 25 minutes, usually, sometimes even 30 minutes, for your mind to calm down. But if you do this practice and you stick to it and you commit and you put the effort in, it will pay massive dividends in your life. So I highly recommend you do that. I'm going to go to the second part of FCKITAL's question, which is about jiu-jitsu and the anxiety or flight response. So, I mean, I'm not a neuroscientist or a doctor or a physiologist of any kind. I do know that the fight or flight response is stimulated pretty much all the time if you've got any kind of stresses in your life. And that if you don't have an outlet to process that energy that gets trapped in your body, it does become a negative thing. So jiu-jitsu for me, very often, today was a perfect example. It is one of the ways that I just allow that energy to dissipate. And for example, today I was having some anxiety over something, and I went to jiu-jitsu training and trained my buddies and did a few rounds and then hung out with everyone afterwards. And after that, I was like a different person. I could feel that energy had left my body. So to answer your question, I think the practice of jiu-jitsu could be used to modulate that anxiety. I know it can be used to modulate that anxiety response. I guess the question is, can you carry over that into a different modality? So for example, you might not be able to get to the jiu-jitsu mat. Can you conjure up those thoughts, those feelings, and that positivity that you generate during jiu-jitsu in other things? I know you can do it with almost any exercise. A good workout will always do it, but maybe something else can do it too. Maybe chopping wood, maybe taking a walk. I mean, there's loads of different things. So I hope that answers your question, my friend. Let's go on to Savvy Savage. What is your current ideal morning routine practice and then evening practice? So I'm not sure if he's speaking specifically about jiu-jitsu or not, but I'll just answer a general ideal routine about life. And I don't always manage to do this. I do try, though. My ideal routine is I wake up and I do not check my phone. That's the first thing. I don't check my phone or my computer because those usually have a way of just sending me down a negativity spiral for some reason or other. I wake up and I take some deep breaths, and I either go for a walk, or I do 20 to 30 minutes of light stretching, and then I write my gratitude journal for 30 minutes. And once I've done that, I make myself some kind of protein smoothie or something like that. And that signifies to me the start of my day once I've done those things. And then the evening practice is I like to read a little bit, but I also like to meditate in the evenings. I just find that if I meditate just before bed, I sleep exceptionally well and I wake up feeling better than usual. Of course, you have to be careful not to be lying down when you meditate because at night, because you're usually pretty tired and then you fall asleep. So I usually sit with my back up against the wall, and that helps not to fall asleep. His next question from Savvy Savage is any books or recommendations of books that you've read? And there's a few. I'm just going to pull up my. I don't actually read that much lately. I listen to Audible books on or audiobooks. And the one that I have enjoyed more than anything over the last couple of years is called Unscripted: Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Entrepreneurship. It's by a gentleman named MJ DeMarco. And he just explains how a lot of us have gotten into a position whereby we live these scripted lives. These lives are scripted by our parents, scripted by society, scripted by the systems that that have been built up around society, including capitalism, and that living a scripted life usually doesn't lead to fulfillment. And if you can become what he calls unscripted, you can lead a life of far more enjoyment and power. And this is such an incredibly thought-provoking and stimulating book. I remember a friend of mine told me about it, and I told another friend, and he told another friend, and then the five of us actually met up to discuss this book because it had just moved us all so much, and we created like an impromptu little book club thing, which is really not my style at all, but that's how much this book affected us. And I consider us all pretty smart guys, and we all read quite a lot, and this book really just, it hit a nerve with all of us. So I recommend checking out Unscripted. Another book that I am reading at the moment is called Sink or Destiny, and it is by Deepak Chopra. And it's interesting because he, the Sink or Destiny book or program is all about getting in touch with your true self, your higher self, and then noticing the synchronicities that he claims there's millions of synchronicities in our life all the time, and they are. Sometimes they have meaning, and if you become in touch with yourself enough, you can identify them and use them to guide you to your best destiny or your best dharma. And I think that was very much tied into what happened to me in the forest out there in Northern California. I was actually working with the Sink or Destiny program a lot, and I have a feeling that the meditations and things I was doing allowed me to hear that voice, and that in itself was a synchronicity of sorts. So I recommend that book as well. It's fantastic. Just scrolling down the list here of books, there was something else that was quite interesting that I read a couple of months ago. I just have to find it. It was a book by an FBI agent on, oh, it's called The Like Switch. It's by an ex-FBI agent, and it's all about social interactions and how to have the best chance of having people like you when you interact with them socially. I find those types of books generally a little bit formulaic and a little bit weird. I don't like the idea of thinking that every interaction with someone should be about flicking certain switches or following a formula or a system to get them to trick them into liking you. But this one wasn't really like that. It had some deeper insights into the reason people like you, and it's usually due to the fact that you give them your attention and you give them your focus for a period of time, and you're fully present with them. And I found that that was very cool. And I spoke to Adam Redzovich. We had a discussion about this on the podcast a while back about how we really make an effort to connect with our students by giving them our full focus and attention. And that book, The Like Switch, goes into that. I recommend checking that out. Okay, so the next one, do you currently consume cannabis and do you combine it with yoga or jujitsu? The answer is every now and then. It's a very, very rare occasion that I do. And I find that I've got nothing against cannabis, but I just find that it knocks me off my path usually. I'm really trying to be focused and I'm trying to build several things. And I find that while it does bring some positives and some benefits, like for yoga, it makes you so much more flexible and so much more relaxed and so much more able to connect with your body and breathe deeply. That's a benefit, but the negative is it makes me think too much. I already have a tendency to think a lot, and I don't want to think that much anymore. So that trade-off isn't really worth it for me in my current stage in life. Maybe when I retire and have however many years, and I'm just living in the forest permanently, and I can relax and not have to worry about my business and not have things think about things like that, I will get back into it, but at the moment, it's not a big part of my life. And then Savvy Savage asks, when was the last time you had a psychedelic experience? I've kind of scaled way back on my psychedelic usage. I don't really use them that much, especially not in the United States, where they're all pretty much illegal. And that's where I live now, so I don't really use them much anymore. I know my business partner was a bit concerned about me a couple of years ago. I went too far down the rabbit hole, basically. No other way to put it. And a part of that was linked with the fact that I was doing a lot of psychedelics. I also he gave me a good piece of advice, and he said that we're in a position where we, as jiu-jitsu teachers, we influence younger people who listen to us and interact with us. And I really. He thinks that it's a negative idea to plant those seeds in young people's minds, and I think that's true. I think while psychedelics can have incredibly powerful impacts on people, it's not necessarily a good idea for young people whose minds are developing to try them. And in fact, if there was a young person who was interested in trying them or affected by any of my work and thought that they should try them after listening to some of my experiences, I'd be di very disappointed. And I think that young people should stay away from these things. And also, it's a phase. I mean, maybe I will do psychedelics again later in life, but right now I need to focus on other things. So I've kind of put them on the back burner. Next question is, how is Arizona treating you? Does this environment of the desert have an impact on your awareness? Well, that's a fantastic question. When I moved, well, before I'd come to Arizona, I always thought of the desert as kind of just this big rolling collection of sand dunes and things like that. And it's completely not the case. The kind of the Sonoran Desert, which is a desert that I'm in, is actually incredibly green, and I don't want to say lush, but there's so much wildlife here. I take this little walk to a park near my house a few times a week, and there are just so many lizards and birds and snakes and rabbits and so much wildlife running around. It's completely not what I expected. What I love about it as well is the sunshine. I crave sunshine, and I like to go watch the sunset every night. And to tie it back to the awareness thing, that little ritual of walking to this park in the early evening and just watching the sunset has done so much for me. It's been so good for me. I have found that the summer has been incredibly difficult, though. I mean, everyone told me it was going to be hot here, but I had no idea. It's brutal. There's no other way to put it. And that 4 weeks in or 3 weeks in Northern California during the peak of the summer, I really needed that because my wife and I, we were struggling a little bit. It was 107 degrees to 110 degrees, like 2 weeks in a row, which is just, for those in Europe and South Africa, that's like 40 degrees, 40, 44 degrees sometimes. It's not pleasant. So, the desert's great. Arizona's great. I recommend coming to check it out, but do not come in summer. That's a bad move. Okay, the next one is from another Reddit user called Slightly Stoop Kid, and my question for you is, what do you think about McGregor versus Khabib? Is there anything you see from Khabib or any of the other high-level grapplers in the UFC that you've integrated into your jiu-jitsu? If I'm honest, I don't watch much MMA or much UFC. It's not really an interest of mine anymore, so I can't really comment on that. I'm sure that those top guys are using a bunch of incredible and unusual jiu-jitsu moves. Every now and then something will come up on one of my social media feeds of some ridiculous submission that one of them is pulling off. You know, I don't train that much no-gi anymore. It's mainly gi that I train, so it's not MMA and gi jiu-jitsu are two very, very different things, despite what any person tells you. They're very, very different things. So there's not really that much that I see that I can integrate into my jiu-jitsu at this point, and or there isn't that I have seen that I feel like integrating into my jiu-jitsu, because A, I don't watch much of it, and B, as I said, MMA and gi jiu-jitsu are very, very different. Next question is from Red D. Hey Nick, I'd like to hear more about how you ended up in Tucson and how David Riley is building a world-class organization in that town. Great question. And so I married a American woman, and my beautiful wife Annie, who I met in Los Angeles at the time. She was living in LA. I met her in LA. I love being able to say that. It's just so cool. One of the highlights of my life, saying I met this beautiful woman in LA. It's awesome. And her family is originally from Tucson. That's where she grew up. And when we decided to get married and I decided to move to the United States, it was just easiest for us to live out here, because we're near her parents and she knows the area, and LA is just a little bit too intense at this stage in my life. I don't really want to be in a place like that right now. That might change in the future, but right now I don't want to be in LA. David Riley is the owner of Undisputed, which is a big gym here in Tucson, and he is definitely building a world-class organization. To answer Red D's question, how is he building a world-class organization? And I'm sure he's referring to a jiu-jitsu organization. Well, primarily he's just a stand-up human being, and he cares about his students, and he puts his heart and soul into his work. And secondarily, he just is a very good businessman who is very just and fair, and who stands by his word. And I think those two things together, I mean, it's pretty hard not to succeed when you've got those things going. I know the thing about Undisputed as well is there's just a wonderful vibe there. Everyone's cool. There's no bullshit. You know, I've been to a few of the other schools in Tucson, and they seem cool as well. I just felt the best, that Undisputed resonated with me the best, and that's why I kept going back there. It's also probably the best distance from my house as well. But that doesn't play too much of a role. Hope that answers your question, Red. Okay, next one is from Gerald Garland. Gerald's actually a very close friend of mine. And he says, "Hey Nick, hope your vacation was cool. My question is this. Did you know slash feel you were ready when you got your black belt? If so, how did you know? Asking for a friend." Yeah, so I definitely knew I was ready for my black belt. You know, it's something that you can, it's just like competing. Guys say, oh, they'll compete when they're ready. And you're never going to be perfectly ready, but you are ready as it stands. It's the same way with the black belt. You're never going to know everything. You're never going to have ultimate levels of skill and perfection in your grappling. But when your coach says it's time, it's time. And you will grow into the belt for sure. So there was no way I was going to say no and give the belt back or not feel, you know, ready to wear that, because I put a lot of effort and a lot of focus into it, and I knew I had the skills and I knew I had the abilities. So, and to answer the question, Gerald, I think you're pretty much ready for your black belt too, my brother. Hopefully, you're going to get it sometime in the next 5 to 10 years. Enjoy your vacation. I know Gerald's in Sarajevo now. Hope you're enjoying yourself, and I hope you get this out there. Next question is from Enzo Futia, and this one's from Facebook. Nick, what submissions and/or movements have you found yourself consistently leaning on and coming back to throughout your BJJ journey? Also, how do you keep your game from getting stale? And finally, when are we going to get another Roy Dean episode? So, submissions and/or movements am I constantly leaning on? There is this one particular movement that I use every single time I train, which is called the hip scoop. I've never really seen anything like this movement taught anywhere else, and I haven't put much of it online, or it's not on any of the free channels. But it's kind of like almost like a reverse shrimp. So instead of sliding your butt backwards, you actually scoop your hips. Let's say you're lying on your right side, on your right shoulder, and your hips are facing towards the right. What you do is you engage your feet with the floor, and then you scoop your hips all the way to the other side. So you'll go from being on your right side to being square with your hips facing the ceiling to being on your left shoulder with your hips facing the left. That's an incredibly versatile and powerful movement that I use all the time, my jiu-jitsu, every single day, from attacking positions and defensive positions. So I lean on that a lot. Submissions, it's a tough one. Been getting into the Bharata Platter lately, and I've been using a setup, funny enough, taught to me by David Riley from Undisputed. I set it up from from the Kimura, from when I'm doing Kimura from north south with the guy on his back and he defends. There's a really nice entry into the Bharata Platter from there. That's probably my favorite move of the moment, the one I'm falling back to a lot. Enzo is also asking, how do I keep my game from getting stale? And I mean, that's pretty easy to answer. It's whenever you start to feel bored, you need to get some new material or some new perspectives and stop doing the things that you're doing. So, I was getting the, for example, my half guard was getting stale because I was catching the sweep quite a few times. And then I was just like, okay, I got to find something different. So I think I was at a seminar. Yeah, I was at a Sean Hammond seminar and he showed this cool new half guard move. And then I started trying to use that. And even though it didn't always work, it was fun just practicing this new thing. So I hope that helps. And so next question is from Johnny Meath. It's quite a long one. Johnny's a really fun guy I met in Ireland several years ago. And he says, I love Eddie Bravo's combat jiu-jitsu and hope this might go into gi format as it reminds me of the old Gracie vids before the UFC. I was wondering what your view on this is because there's a lot of history in BJJ and about how and why it started and where it is now. Hicks and Gracie is also trying to bring back self-defense jiu-jitsu. So it's my understanding, Johnny, that you're asking about whether we could do something in gi jiu-jitsu similar to Eddie Bravo's combat jiu-jitsu. I think that would be a fantastic idea because that was a great initiative of Eddie's, and EBI is, in my opinion, the most exciting format when it comes to grappling competition today. And if I'm honest, IBJJF is the least exciting format. And I think if jiu-jitsu is ever going to become a bit more mainstream, we're going to need to change the rules a little bit just to make it a bit more fun to watch. So I think that's important. I'm guessing Johnny's second question is about self-defense in jiu-jitsu. I mean, you guys have heard my take on it many times. It doesn't make me popular to say it, but I'm not a big believer in self-defense jiu-jitsu. I think any good purple belt will have as good of a chance as anyone who's learned all the basic self-defense moves, because he just has a good awareness of how the body moves, and he's got a also awareness of what it's like to be in a confrontation with someone who's trying to impose his will upon try to impose their will upon him. I think that getting into fights in the street or in bars or in road rage incidents, I think that's all pretty dumb. I would avoid that as best as possible. I saw some guys put up a video of some jiu-jitsu black belt got killed in a road rage incident, and these guys jumped on it to try to get clicks, and they wanted to talk about it to get like some media exposure, and they were explaining when you should never use your jiu-jitsu. I mean, I personally think you should never use your jiu-jitsu full stop unless you're in a situation in which you have absolutely no choice and your back's against the wall. One of those could be, just hypothetically speaking, you're in a room and some guy jumps you, and then you're in a confrontation, and he jumps on you and he's gripped onto you. Like, yeah, try and throw him, try and get his back and strangle him. Sure, I get that. When you're walking down the street and you see a gang of five guys and they want to beat you up, the best self-defense is to run away. The second best is to try to talk your way out of it and just be cool. Taking one of them down to the ground and fighting them is not a good idea. I had a friend who had a friend in the United Kingdom who tried to do that, And while he took one of the, it was three guys jumped him in an alley. He took one of them down and mounted him because that was, he just reverted to his training. It was probably an instinct. And while he was doing that, a guy came up with a box cutter and slashed him across the head and took most of his scalp off. There's very, very, very few instances where jiu-jitsu is gonna be able to save your life. It's just accept it. Like, just don't believe the hype, you know? And one of those instances is a one-on-one confrontation with an unarmed attacker. I think then jiu-jitsu will have a huge chance of helping getting you out of that situation. But generally, those types of events, those violent events, are so randomized and so difficult to control, and there's so many variables that it's almost impossible to train for them. And I suggest you don't go out looking for them. I really, really do suggest that, because no good comes of it, you know, no good comes of that. Anyway, that's my thoughts on that. Next one is from Chris Perry. Jiu-jitsu is definitely one of the most positive influences in my life, but admittedly, there is sometimes a mental block that can prevent this positivity from spreading beyond the mats. I've heard you mention that you intentionally shifted your mindset towards one of positivity. Could you provide some insight into how you accomplished this? Yeah, so, I mean, Chris, though, the truth is, I'm tr when I mentioned that to you, I didn't mean that I just shifted and that was it, and I was positive all the time, because that's definitely not the case. I have really difficult days where I don't feel very positive at all, and I've realized that it's a full-time thing. It's a lifelong commitment to trying to change that polarity from negative to positive, and trying to be someone who looks at the world in a glass half full kind of way. It's so cliched. There's so many self-help books out on it. There's so many memes about that. But I really do believe that when you are in a good mood and you are a grateful, appreciative, positive person, that life brings you good things, and that when you're on the other end of that polarity, that life kind of kicks you in the nuts. And it's, I've said it before many times, the world is your mirror, you know, and it's just, it makes sense to me because I've seen this in my life, Chris. You know, I've seen it happen many times. I've seen the way the world literally adjusts to the way I'm interacting with it. And so it was a logical choice. If I want better results from the world, I have to give it better energy. I hope that helps, my brother. The next one is from Mike DeRocher. And Mike says, I'm very curious of how you and Kit Dale first met up. His humor matches mine to a T. In brackets, I believe lead paint is a factor. His and your relationship seems pretty close, and your outlook on BJJ does too. Yeah, Kit is a wonderful man, really lovely human being. For such an incredible fighter, he's also, in a way, very switched on. I think he's a very high vibration individual, and he's just got a good positive mental outlook as well. And to answer the question how he and I connected, it was during the filming of Beyond Technique, which is a video series that he and I did together. I flew out to Australia to film that with him because some people had told me I should connect with him because we had similar teaching styles. So I think he called me up, or I called him up. We had a chat on Skype. I saw that he was switched on and had similar viewpoints to mine, and we decided to do that project together. So that's how we started working together. Next one is from Arun Subramanian. Jiu-jitsu is obviously spreading and is more available than ever, but it wasn't always this way. What are some locations you visited in your travels over the years where you were surprised by how high the level was? You know, the place that blew my mind the most was France. And I was only there. I've been to France many times, but the last time I was there was long ago. So it's probably even better than it was then. But I think it's got something to do with the fact that judo is so prevalent in France. I think it's the biggest sport in France. And I just remember the guys being incredibly tough, just physical and strong, and a good understanding of the mechanics of grappling, and I just thought they were really, really good. So France is a place that surprised me. Last time I went back to South Africa, I was pretty surprised by how much the level had improved as well, because South Africa used to be the Wild West with very few teachers out there, and now there's a good group of black belts and some really tough brown belts. My friend Martino is an excellent brown belt.
My friend Kurt is a fantastic black belt teaching there. My brother's an excellent black belt teaching out there. My friend Chris Bright as well. And just generally, the level in South Africa is much, much, much better than it was 20 years ago when I started training there. Somewhere else, the Philippines is really good as well. Problem with the Philippines is the guys there are usually a lot smaller than Europeans or Americans. So even though they can be really, really skilled and sometimes even more skilled, they aren't as tough usually in grappling, because most of the time, especially a guy my size, I can just outpower them. But their technical level is very, very good, and Filipinos absolutely love jiu-jitsu, so that's another cool place where the level is better than I thought. Next one is by Howie Spratt. Nick, any chance you and Wardeen will do more work together in the future? Honestly, just some music vids of training rolling with rock. Yes, definitely. Roy's one of the best people I know and one of my favorite people in jiu-jitsu. I love his aesthetic, or the aesthetic of his work. He's got an amazing eye for production, and I definitely want to work with him more. So I will do that in the future for sure. Next one is from Simranjot Singh. Nick, I'm curious about what you believe is the most important way to spend time in your training, specifically for a new person. I keep getting told I need to drill more. But does that mean that technique drilling or solo movement drills are more like a back and forth flow roll? And how much rolling sparring should I be doing? Essentially, how do I know what's most important to my training, and how do I determine how to split my time? I really believe that as a complete beginner, the most important thing is just to roll, just to understand the parameters of how to tap and how to let go when you have a submission on, and also what you're not allowed to do. And then just roll as much as you can. That's the most important drill. Then, as you get a little bit better, to start adding in specific sparring, and or combination of specific sparring from specific positions, and drilling combinations of moves from specific positions. But right now, just go to class, my man. Just go to class as much as you can. It'll all become clear. Third last question is from Zager Jones. Nick, do you have any reading recommendations, inspiring literature? So we've already answered that earlier. How often? Okay, well, I'll just add one in there. Another great book that's inspiring to read is, it's beyond reading, I guess. It's any work by Osho. One of them is called, well, my favorite book of his is called Osho, the Joy of, sorry, it's called Courage, the Joy of Living Dangerously. If you want to know more about Osho and get a more balanced viewpoint of the guy, watch the show on Netflix called Wild Wild Country. It's profound. It is mind-blowing, and I think you'll enjoy that a lot. His next question is, how often, say weekly, should one practice yoga if they do BJJ? Also, in your opinion, what are the most important things a white belt should focus on? Okay, yoga, that's a tough one. First thing is, you need to be doing yoga properly if you're doing it. Yoga is not stretching. It does incorporate some elements of stretching, but yoga is much more about strengthening the body. It took me a long time to understand this. And you strengthen the body through what's called active stretching. So make sure you're doing all the postures correctly. And that means whichever part of your body is being stretched, the opposing muscles should be activated and keeping your structure solid. Otherwise, you might be just causing yourself more harm than good. So that's the first piece of advice. And how many times per week should you practice? I think the best for me, what I found the best formula is to do, one day off, one day on. And the day on is usually hard training of any kind. It could be conditioning or jiu-jitsu. And then the day off is usually yoga or some sort of restorative practice or active rest. So that could be just stretching, or it could be yoga, or it could be, taking a walk, or Tai Chi, or something like that. That's my current routine. I'll train, I think it's 3 or 4 times a week I'll do jiu-jitsu, or it's between 3 and 4 times a week, or conditioning of some kind, like calisthenics and kettlebell stuff and body weight stuff. And then on the opposite day, then I do some yoga and restorative work. And as a white belt, one of the most important things you should focus on, just sparring, going to class, just the same as Simranjot's question earlier. Next one is Mako C. Forge. What are your views on the importance of competing? Also, your views on restricting belt levels to specific techniques during competitions? That's a good question. The importance of competing, I think it is very, very good for you to compete. It's just such a profoundly challenging thing on all levels to go there and put yourself out there and deal with the fear response and overcome, and I always say I hate competing and it always gives me a lot of anxiety, but win or lose afterwards, I always am so happy that I did that. And I wouldn't want to rob you of that, Mako, and I wouldn't want you to deny yourself of that growth and that happiness that you'll get from putting yourself through competition, despite the fact that you might not want to. So I highly recommend that. My views on restricting belt levels to specific techniques during competitions, restricting moves to specific belt levels. Yeah, I think there's something to be said for that. I would not want a white belt or a couple of white belts who had been training for 3 weeks to try doing scissor takedowns and Imanari shots into heel hooks and spiking people onto their heads. I mean, it's just a recipe for disaster. So I think that that is one of the great things about JJBF and the way they codified the rule set is they have done it with the safety of the practitioners in mind. And I think that will make, I think that's a positive thing. And white belts have no business doing some of those crazier, more dangerous techniques. And I think we're on to the last question. Yes, Gilbert Michael Olivas. There's plenty of evolution in one's progress and character as they go through the ranks from white to black belt. Going from black belt to third degree, what are some of the changes and experiences you encountered at each level of black belt? Yeah, man, that's an interesting question. So I've been a black belt for 10 years now, and I've spoken about this before on the podcast that jiu-jitsu is it's like any other relationship. My relationship with jiu-jitsu is like any other intense relationship in that I go through cycles of love and not so much love. People often think that you're going to get the black belt and it's going to be great. You're going to be this mythical ninja grappler that's just got no more difficulties or no more challenges, and it's just not true. It's just not true. And that was one of the big things for me, is to realize, again, it's so cliched, but there's an expression in Buddhism which is before enlightenment chopping wood, after enlightenment chopping wood. And it's the same with jiu-jitsu. It's like before the black belt you practice, and after the black belt you practice. And that's what it is, my man. Regarding the evolution of character, I mean, I guess it's that thing that jiu-jitsu is always keeping you on your edge. It's not allowing you to become stale or to become complacent. And I think that that's good for your character and helps your character to evolve continuously. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that. That was a long one. It's almost 50 minutes, which is way longer than usual. I know some of you guys have been asking for longer episodes of the show, and I might or might not do that. This is a start. Let's see how we do this one. I want to remind you guys, as always, to please support the show and Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood in any way that you can. One of the ways you can do that is to head on over to the store, which is the easiest URL is jjbgear.com. And use the coupon code podcast and get some of our cool stuff. Our stuff is really, really good. I put my heart and soul into everything, into all the physical goods, into all the digital products. It's all just really high quality stuff. So as you're my listeners and part of my tribe, I always say you guys can get 10% off anything. Just use the coupon code podcast. And also, if you want to be a part of my members club, which is the Master Academy, you can head on over to jiu-jitsu-master-academy.com and you can get a free trial as well. In fact, you'll have to put in jiu-jitsu-master-academy/free-trial, I think. Master Academy is really something special. There's extra podcasts in there as well, which I know a lot of the guys, a lot of the members have been enjoying. And I really take my instruction into a lot of detail on there. It's my very, very best stuff. So you guys might want to check that out. Also, don't forget, if you're into trying CBD, head on over to truthnaturals.co.uk and use the code JJBTruth and you'll get a discount on any of their fantastic CBD products. CBD is cool because it gives you some of the relaxation benefits of cannabis without any of the psychoactive effects. I have experimented with CBD a bit and it's pretty cool in my opinion, so you guys might want to check that out. Hope you enjoyed this different episode of the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood podcast, guys, and I'll be back next week with another guest for you. Until then, peace out and stop all comparison.